Remember to thank your fans. A True Texas Tale, 1971 to 2020. I grew up proud to hear that there are two kinds of people. There are people from Texas, and there are people who wish they were from Texas. I heard this as early as preschool at Arlington Country Day School and all the way through the Arlington Public Schools. Being on the green side of it made me proud. I'd like to thank my many, many fans, all of you who made this happen. I couldn't have done it without you. I paused to put more bright red lipstick on. You need to thank your publicist. They always do that, Lulu shared. Most of all, I'd like to thank my publicist, I added. Gertie and Lulu, y'all get out here, Granny called. There was a loud knock on the door that we should have been expecting. It was Granny reminding us to go preaching since it was Saturday. There was too much competition on Sundays because all the kids in the neighborhood were out trying to save souls. We were still trying to finish our Academy Award acceptance speeches and were regularly interrupted. Granny rolled the map out on the kitchen table, even though there was no change from the previous week. Okay, now, over there, on Perkins Drive, they are already saved. But on Rottingham, you'll find there are some new folks who are just waiting to hear about God's glory. You get them. Y'all go get them. We felt brave knowing we were tasked to save souls. We had studied the map of the neighborhood, and we knew who was saved and who wasn't. We were more thorough than the vacuum cleaner salesman who knew who already bought their vacuums and who didn't. We drank lemonade each time and had a dish of Granny's homemade peach ice cream when we returned from preaching. We never knew if we really closed the sale or not. This time, we brought Lulu's dog, Cinder, and her colorful, wordless preach book. We went straight to Rottingham and stared at the house that had a new resident, then approached the porch with Cinder sniffing around. Howdy, what do y'all need? The new resident was a lady with a cigarette in her mouth that she took out and held in her hand as she blew the smoke out the door. Behind her were two little boys playing in the background. We are here to welcome y'all to the neighborhood. We also want to give you a gift. The gift is the good news of your chance for eternal life. Lulu braced herself and began opening the colorful book. The woman looked as though she had heard it before and continued smoking. The black page represents our sinful nature. The white page represents the perfect righteousness that God wants us to aspire for and that will never be known in this world. But when we confess our sins for just a moment, we are white and forgiven. Red represents the blood that Christ shed for us. Lulu sounded confident and theatrical, as if she were pretending to be an elementary school teacher. Then the lady put her finger in the air and pointed to the side, signaling to us to step aside while the pizza delivery guy stepped in front of us with the pizza, and she paid him. She then left the door open while she took it inside. Okay, where were y'all? She asked with mild enthusiasm, still smoking. Lulu continued with green being growth, blue for baptism in the cool blue water to wash the sins clean with intentionality, and yellow being the golden crown of Jesus sitting on the throne. We then sang, "Humble Thyself in the Name of the Lord," with Lulu singing the main part and me singing the backup. Cinder began sniffing the woman in places he shouldn't, and it became hard to sing while pulling him back. If you'd like to know more about salvation, we can come back tomorrow. The woman puffed her cigarette and was hard to read. We're still unpacking, but I thank you very kindly, the lady answered, and Lulu and I were left guessing. We reviewed the neighborhood again to ensure we didn't overlook any other souls. Then it was time to return to Lulu's granny's house for the peach ice cream made with real Texas peaches. In good time, we would be in Tyler, Texas at Camp Pine Cove for Bible study week. As the bus pulled up, we stopped for a moment before getting off and looked out at the whole camp. The last of the campers had gotten off the bus, but we stayed on. We saw the campers walking toward their table to get their cabin assignments. Our eyes combed the whole forest, the scrambling people, and the guitar players who sang welcoming gospel songs. They have no idea, do they? We smiled at each other. We were to be mega celebrities in the future, and no one had any idea they were going to camp with two future movie stars, and that any pictures they took would be worth something in the future. We need to finish our Academy Awards acceptance speeches, we both said. We got off the bus fashionably later, as if we were hiding from the paparazzi. The cabin leaders who recognized us from last year gave a cautious look with a slight smile and thumbed us toward the rest where we had to stand in the long line. The week would be filled with faith talks, large lodge Bible studies, water skiing and swimming. One night, we had a long Bible study with talk of avoiding temptations from the enemy of the Lord. The music, skits, and discussions were all around the serpent and how it is used as the father of all lies. But God is bigger than all of it. As we were all dismissed to our cabins into the night air and the sound of crickets, there was instant screaming and people running in different directions. Right outside the cabin was a water moccasin. Campers immediately knew this was waiting for everyone after the compelling talk and music. The head counselor managed to drop a screen cage over it and then somehow got it into a bag that it couldn't bite through. Back at the cabin, Lulu looked at me and said, "Do you ever think the serpent is trying to keep us from being famous?" We had FOB, which meant flat on back. It meant the cabin leaders needed a break. We could read the Bible, nap, or listen to music on a Walkman. We had to sneak Michael Jackson's Thriller album in because Camp Pine Cove was gospel music only, as a rule. Would people be sneaking posters of us to this camp in the future? The last night of camp was the same, year after year. There was a final Bible study in the large lodge with a farewell theme, with extra music and longer skits, but everything was still shorter than on the previous nights. We were told in bland, emotionless words to go back to our cabins and go to sleep, since the next day was our departure. This was always met with groans. In our pajamas in the dark, when everything was just too quiet and just too dark, we would suddenly see flashing lights outside and hear a strange and alarming siren. Once this got us up and summoned us slowly outside with curiosity, it would be joined by dramatic music. We were summoned further by a megaphone with words pulling us through the woods, the whole camp in pajamas. As we made our way through, we were hit with water balloons being hurled by counselors hiding in the branches of trees. If you were hit, you went to jail. We waited in the jail for another camper to get hit and come to the end of the line so we could be released. Did they know we were future celebrities? There were pictures of us, wet and in baggy pajamas, sitting in the makeshift jail. The next day in the lodge, after being reminded that there are two kinds of people in the world, people from Texas and people who wish they were from Texas, there was a toast as everyone lifted their glasses of lemonade. Here's to lying, cheating, and stealing. May you lie to help a friend. May you cheat death. May you steal the heart of someone you love. This Texas toast became my mother's favorite and was heard at the dinner table from year to year. Granny had us pray for our future husbands every time we saw her. We knelt down and said what she had told us. Pray for your future husband. Much of your happiness depends upon who you end up marrying. We nodded. Dear Lord, I pray for my future husband, since much of my happiness depends upon it. We prayed that prayer for the rest of our childhood and into adulthood. Did you pray for Sylvester Stallone? Lulu asked, with a deviant, lustful hint to her voice. Of course. That's who I'm marrying. We'll live in a mansion with pink marble floors and a big foyer. I was stuck on marrying Sylvester Stallone after we became famous. Lulu's mother, Nina, had a Dairy Queen Coke in one hand and a cigarette in the other when she picked us up from Tyler, Texas, in her orange Volkswagen Bug. The Dairy Queen Coke, the cigarette, and the VW Bug were all a part of Nina, and if this were a Hollywood recreation, then these props would be the most important. The next thing that would be important would be how Nina started every sentence. "Well now, Gertie, how are you doing?" Every sentence started with, "Well now." In previous years, my parents owned and ran the Cattle Mills Mira newspaper in Cattle Mills, Texas. This meant living in Cattle Mills and attending Cattle Mills Elementary. Cattle Mills had a small general store and was not renovated since the 1920s. My teacher, Mrs. Lee, still asked us to bring our lunch pails. I went with my mom to interview people in Cattle Mills when something was newsworthy. I helped my father develop pictures in the darkroom. I learned how a newspaper was run, and I also learned that not every story was true, so this meant that the long interviews my mother conducted sometimes did not amount to a story in the Cattle Mills Mira. The fattest hog won at the Cattle Mills yearly fair, and my parents covered that story while still running the haunted house dressed like ghouls. The judges had no idea who made the winning chili, just that it was the very best Texas chili. My mother put her own picture in the paper with her winning chili and winning ribbon. All this was a quiet pulse of life as we were having a home built in Rockwall nearby. Then, one day, everything changed. There was a murder in Cattle Mills, Texas. The Cattle Mills Mira newspaper needed to investigate and sniff out what had happened. My parents spoke to everyone they could find. This meant working with the police also. One day, we were in the car with everything we owned and driving quickly back to Arlington, where we had lived prior. Sheriffs followed us to keep us safe. There's a murderer in Cattle Mills in Texas, doesn't want journalists looking around. So we were to return to Arlington, Texas, where we started. This made everything else possible, including the preaching, Bible camp with Lulu, and the peach ice cream. This led to meeting Mr. Canal, the principal of Rockmore Elementary, where we now attended. He wore his cowboy hat and boots every day and had a big sign in the foyer that read, "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you," with pictures of people serving one another. If a student failed at this, then he earned a big Texas licking with a big Texas paddle. And we heard it to the right of us in the multi-purpose room. Mrs. Smith told us to read quietly and not look to the right, although it was behind a heavy vinyl curtain designed to divide two rooms. The class sat frozen with various open library books in front of each student while Mrs. Smith put her lipstick on, as she did several times a day. We heard the paddle going on, and this was the first and last time. This story circulated the school as a cautionary tale. This was the year everyone wanted to know who shot J.R. Ewing. And Mr. Canal had a contest for older grades where they could put their guesses in. Lulu and I rode horses at Big D Ranch, feeling every bit on the green side of people from Texas. "When we're famous, I'll have a pink marble floor in my house," I would tell her. "I'm having a private plane with white leather seats," Lulu would say back. "You'll have to fly private or everyone will want your autograph." We continued writing our Academy Awards acceptance speech while being interrupted by Granny, who had the map rolled out for us to go preaching. Lulu and I would grow up and get jobs and lose jobs. Lulu would be, as Granny would say, under one of her spells, where she would get very emotional. When one of us would lose a job, we would call the other and say, "Don't they know who they just fired?" We imagined our names in lights, and any former boss on a meager salary in a small Texas town would regret having let us go. Are we famous yet? Almost. But remember to thank your fans and your publicists. In time, Lulu and I would move out to California together to make our fame a reality. Here, we would have a falling out. She left the butter on the counter of our apartment and it melted. She didn't save enough money. I went to auditions and didn't get the part because, as Lulu had warned, I wore the wrong outfit. She was late to her auditions and not allowed in. The traffic outside our apartment made it hard to have a conversation. Did we pay the electric bill? In good time, we would part ways, but one day, find each other again, one Christmas, with a cheerful reunion. There was one member of Lulu's family who made the news and the headlines. It was Bobby Kay, her brother. Growing up around Bobby Kay, he was a stutterer with all the manners of a Southern gentleman and certainly handsome, but exceedingly shy. A quick phone call from Lulu that was usually meant to evaluate our level of fame and how close we may be to obtaining it was instead, "Did you hear about Bobby Kay?" "No, I have not." "You can read the papers or I can tell you." I covered my face and then looked out the window for a moment and sighed. I heard that her cousin Mimi had become a lady preacher in Tyler, and I was so proud. Since we had preached in the neighborhood alongside her and even attended the Bible studies she ran in her home. But then a few years later, it was that Mimi was drinking. Lulu and I worked at the K Pharmacy that her dad and grandfather owned in Tyler and would hand folks their medicines in a stapled bag with a message to take it with steak and a baked potato to avoid an upset stomach. It felt complete. Every preaching and working mission felt holy. But now Mimi was not the strong preacher lady anymore. I didn't want to know about Bobby Kay. It felt like Irving, Texas, where I knew Lulu needed to move from. It was the end of the rotting sidewalk. He robbed a bank in Irving, no weapon, but he stuttered when he said, "This is robbery. Stick them up." He's getting 5 years since he's nonviolent. Oh, Lulu, I'm so sorry. I've inherited his daughter, my niece. Mom and I will raise her while he's in the jailhouse, Lulu said with a mix of anger and obligation. This would obstruct our quest for fame. Our quest for fame is put on hold, I said this with a forced enthusiasm. Wow, I guess so. I knew this was just an excuse. Had Bobby Kay not gone to jail, would we really have our names in lights? Bobby Kay would continue violating his probation and would rob the same bank in Irving a second time and with the same stutter. This would be met with the same bank teller saying with an eye roll, "Bobby Kay, is that you again?" He would get another sentence. Lulu would now have full custody of her niece. John Matlack played for the Texas Rangers during our junior high years, and I sat next to his daughter, Christy, in Texas history class, remembering celebrating Texas history with Coach Brown from Nichols Junior High School was to study every chapter from start to finish and to hear, in between, Texas was founded on thieves, renegades, and prostitutes. Coach Brown led the seventh grade football team, taught Texas history, and pinched the bottoms of his favorite seventh grade girls. A pinch from Coach Brown meant that the girl had a lure and she could tell everyone about her Texas branding. Somewhere in Bobby Kay's sentencing was that derelict Texas pride, and it ran parallel with our neighborhood preaching. Lulu went to Southern Methodist University on a scholarship and right before graduation had a nervous breakdown, reminiscent of Granny saying, "Lulu's under one of her spells again." I attended a public Ivy League up north before our California escapade and falling out. After our falling out, I would marry and have a child and a full career. One day, while driving the wrong way to the wrong airport, I would think of Nina. Not Lulu, but Nina. I thought of every detail of Nina and was unsure why. I remembered her Dairy Queen Coke, her cigarettes, the orange VW bug, and her t-shirts that came in different colors and all read woman power. I remembered her starting every sentence with, "Well, now," and how she would watch Johnny Carson curled up on the couch and adored Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson. I thought of her large brown eyes and pretty face and the way she quoted George O'Keefe to Lulu and I when we were moving out to California by giving us the emboldened words, "Choose not to be afraid." I thought about her career as a professor of women's studies at a local college. I remember when Lulu and I were 12. We slept until Nina and Bobby Kay woke us up, telling us in a panic to sweep the house. The police are on the way. Lulu and I looked at each other confused. Bobby Kay, who was 14 at the time, had come into the living room late at night while Nina was watching Johnny Carson and saw her tied up on the couch and a man with a knife standing over her. The man got scared when he saw Bobby Kay and ran out the back door. The man had entered from the same back door and asked Nina, "Anyone else in the house?" He was skinny, pale, shaking, and nervous. "No one but me," Nina said, wishing to protect Lulu, me, and Bobby Kay. The man had turned Nina's TV off abruptly, and this got Bobby Kay's attention because he knew his mama fell asleep on the couch watching Johnny Carson every night. The police came and Lulu and I huddled together, glad that Nina was okay and that Bobby Kay had come out to startle the coward. Every memory I had of Nina flashed through my mind as I drove on for over an hour, going the wrong way, feeling as though Nina was right there next to me. Why was I thinking of Nina and not Lulu? The very next morning, my mother texted me an obituary picture of Nina. She had just died a day or so before, and we had no idea. She simply appeared heavily in my consciousness. This led to Lulu and I reuniting on a cold Christmas in Dallas at my mother's home. My mother had met the Dallas criteria of being a beauty queen, having only come to Texas as a young girl in her early 20s. For a non-native Texan, no one loved Texas more than my mother, and so it always loved her back. The reunion was cheerful, and after a while, it was as though Lulu and I were never apart. At one point, we would look at each other and ask, "Any auditions coming up? Did we ever finish our Academy Awards acceptance speeches?" When she would leave that Christmas night, I would call to her as she was getting into her car, "Lulu, always remember to thank your fans." Somewhere under the large, dark Texas sky are two very famous women, but you've never heard of them. They are performing songs, dances, dramatic monologues, and movie roles. Their names are in lights, and the line is down the street and around the corner. Most of all, they have their Academy Awards acceptance speeches ready to read, red lipstick and gloss sitting nearby. The curtain rises, and there's an encore every night. Under this Texas sky, everything is just as it should be. Mimi is still preaching, and she's dry. Everyone on our map of the neighborhood is saved. There are no bank robbers named Bobby Kay in jail, just photos of famous Texas renegades who got away. This show is available anytime I want to see it, and no one needs reminding to thank their fans. The end.